Coming up on this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society, for the 14th year in a row, we're not going to Gamescom either. It's dangerous to go alone, so the Nintendo Cartridge Society goes with you. Welcome to Nintendo Cartridge Society. My name is Patrick Ellers, and I'm joined, as I am always joined, by my co-host, Mark Mitchell. We've got a good show for you today. We're going to be talking about the news from the week, including Nintendo skipping Gamescom this year. And then on Thursday, we are sorting the Metroid games into their greatest hits. But Mark, in the meantime, how's it going?
It's going great. Patrick, I want to raise a topic with you that I don't think you and I have ever discussed before. And that's Luke Wilson, the actor Luke Wilson.
Okay, yeah.
So
Not Owen Wilson. Star of such movies as Cars.
Yes.
Right.
Luke Wilson,
star of
This Is What I Want to Bring Up with
Okay,
you.
Great, yes.
Okay, so Hulu, I was going to watch an episode of 30 Rock, and Hulu, in its header position, you know, you open it up and it's like, boom, this is what we want you to know.
Watch this.
We want you to know that new on Hulu, there's a movie called The Best Man.
Okay.
That's ostensibly an action movie. I haven't watched it, but this is what the imagery is telling me.
Okay, all right.
It's Dolph Lundgren and Luke Wilson standing back to back, both holding guns.
Okay.
On like a brown background. And this is the blurb.
Yeah.
Luke Wilson, parentheses, 310 to Yuma, and Dolph Lundgren, parentheses, The Expendables.
Sure.
Star in this pulse-pounding, action-packed thriller. And this is what happened in my mind. I was like, I would not have clocked Luke Wilson as like the star of 310 to Yuma.
No, neither would I.
But for an action movie, what else are you going to put there?
Great question. You can't be like Luke Wilson, Royal Tenenbaums.
that was my thing is like, wait, actually, how many Luke Wilson movies can I name?
Right. I mean, here's the thing. I don't dislike Luke Wilson.
No, I have nothing against him.
Nothing against him. But he is sort of like an unmemorable actor, right? Where like he shows up in something and you're like, oh yeah, Luke Wilson is in this.
Yeah.
But you're not like, oh yeah,
a Luke Wilson movie.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, let's go see 310 to Yuma.
Right. Which a movie I've not seen.
I haven't either. Maybe he plays a pivotal role in it. Should we look it up?
Yeah, let's look it up. Right, let's look up. 310 to Yuma.
Okay, Bottle Rocket. Okay.
Right. Okay, sure.
Bong Water, Telling Lies in America. I'm just starting in 1996. I'm now in 1997.
Uh-huh.
Scream 2. Okay.
Luke Wilson's in Scream 2?
Plays a character in the film within a film.
Ah, okay. That
Stab.
Makes sense. Right.
Let's see. Home Fries. I've heard of, never seen it. Charlie's Angels. Plays some character called Peter Kaminsky. Legally Blonde.
Oh, yes. He's definitely in Legally Blonde.
Yeah.
I remember him now in Legally Blonde. He's good in Legally Blonde.
He's great in Legally Blonde.
But it would be crazy to be like, best man, Luke Wilson, parentheses, Legally Blonde.
Right.
And Dolph Lundgren.
parentheses, Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy.
Right.
Okay,
right.
He's in stuff that I've seen. But he plays Zeke in 310 to Yuma, everybody's favorite character.
That's all fine and well and good. You did a nice job identifying Luke Wilson, Hulu blurb. But what about pointing for Dolph Lundgren to be like from The Expendables? Like, The Expendables is about people who are from other movies, right? Like, that's the shtick of it. To then later use that as the movie that someone is from feels maddening.
But there were what? Four Expendables?
At least
five.
Three.
Expendables?
Yeah.
And so that in and of itself is, yes, when the first one came out,
sure,
they were, people from, like, older action
stars
from other franchises. But now, yeah, I mean, he probably is.
Why don't the Expendables cross over with the Fast and the Furious guys?
They should.
I think there are a lot of actors playing characters in both series, right? Like,
and
Jason Statham is in both of them.
Oh, you're right. And then wasn't there, I want to say this was like 10 years before The Expendables, there was a film starring like Helen Mirren and Morgan Freeman and
you're talking about like Red?
Yes.
Is
right?
It like
and
Bruce Willis
like,
in that?
And Bruce Wilson, they're playing like old spies.
Did they ever make Lady Expendables? Did that ever happen?
Okay, this is either
yeah.
a shared fever dream, or I want to say
you sort of think that
I sort of think yeah. the Lady Expendables might be a thing.
I'm looking up Lady Expendables, and I hope I don't get flagged for anything here. Lady Expendables. Okay, great. It brings up a movie called Mercenaries from 2014.
Okay.
But it's called Mercenaries : Lady Expendables.
Is it one of those like ripoff movies? Like
yes.
Transmorphers?
So kind of. It's got Vivica A. Fox in it
okay.
and Zoe Bell and actresses I don't recognize. A lot of actresses I don't. It's got 2 out of 5 stars on IMDb. So probably not the movie that I'm asking for.
Mm-hmm.
I want a Lady Expendables, Mark. Is that so much to ask?
No, I think it's perfectly reasonable.
If you would like to help us get a Lady Expendables, you can support us over on Patreon, patreon.com/NintendoCartridgeSociety, where if you are supporting us at the 8-bit or 16-bit levels, you can get access to our once a month episodes of miniseries that we are putting out. We are currently making our way through NCS Arcade.
That's right. This is a series where Patrick and I are playing games available on Nintendo Switch Online or Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack that we've never beaten before.
We
started with The Legend of Zelda, The Minish Cap. We then played Jet Force Gemini, and then Kirby Tilt and Tumble, and we are currently preparing to talk about Sonic the Hedgehog 2 for the Sega Genesis.
By the way, I'm proud of you every time you say Jet Force Gemini, right?
Thank you.
Every single time, I'm like, is he going to do it?
See, over the 700 and like 74 or 750 episodes that we've
yes,
done.
Roughly, yes.
There's like mini arcs in there where we learn and grow.
Yeah. Yeah, there's learning and growing on this show. Yes, so if you are interested in any of that, you can support us on the Patreon. And you can check out our previous miniseries where we talked about Broadway shows or detective shows on TV. So check that out. If you would like to get into our Discord, which is where we've got a bunch of people hanging out, talking about Nintendo, talking about the show, you can email us at NintendoCartridgeSociety@gmail.com. And I will send you an invitation to hang out in the Discord. It's invite only. So, you know, we keep the creeps out, Mark.
It's a cool place
mm-hmm.
to be.
You were asking me before we started rolling if there are any references that I make that I don't expect people to pick up on, and you saying right now it's a cool place to be. There is the mall food court in Appleton, Wisconsin. Little Chute Mall, whatever it is. There's just a lot of like little quotes and stuff like up on the walls in the food court. And then there's one that seems to be describing the food court and possibly the mall in general. And it just says, a cool place to shop and eat. And I say, a cool place to shop and eat all the time when I'm thinking about places that I like to visit. This is a cool place to shop and eat. Also, my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle source book has been coming out. The first 2 issues are available in comic book stores. Now, issue number 3 comes out in a little over a month. So if you're interested in that, pre-order it. Issue 3 is all about gods, magic, and time travel. Stuff gets crazy. So check that all out. I'm very excited about all of it. Mark, before we dig into what we've been playing this week, we have to discuss a little bit of a debug maybe about the medals in Star Fox. So last week we talked about our favorite Nintendo secrets, including the ability to play Star Fox multiplayer on Star Fox 64 on foot, to have the characters be on foot. And I said that you needed to earn all the medals in the regular mode and all the medals in expert mode. It was brought up in the Discord that like maybe you don't need to get them all. And then everyone went feverishly a-Googling, and it's unclear exactly what it is you need. Some sites say you only need the medals on expert mode in Venom, and some don't. So, like, this feels like one of those things that, like, did anyone ever accomplish this?
Right, because it feels like it could be provable.
It seems like it's imminently provable, right?
And yet the internet doesn't know. It's just one of those strange things.
Yes, that's right. It's a secret to everybody, right, is what's happening.
Maybe it is the greatest Nintendo secret.
Wow. So really, it should have counted for all of our secrets, and Navcom should have taken
Curse
us back
you,
out.
Curse you, Navcom!
But he did eventually take us... Well, you know, you can listen to the episode. It's all there. All right, Mark, let's get into what we've been playing this week. I have to confess, I have not been playing much. I'm in a little bit of a deadline rabbit hole. But, rabbit hole? What is that what I mean?
Sure.
You go down a rabbit hole? Anyway. But I have, so there was a brief period where, as I was writing this weekend, my internet went out. Internet out. Catastrophe. I can't distract myself with any, like, music or any sound or whatever. I'm just alone with my thoughts and my work. Nightmare. So instead, I was like, what do I have that plays music? We've got a reel-to-reel on the bookcase in our living room, but I took those speakers to work a long time ago, so I can't listen to the reel-to-reel player anymore. And then was just like, geez, I really don't have any other way to play music. You know what music I can play to my heart's content? The music from Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Finally coming in clutch.
Finally coming in clutch. Wouldn't work if I was if I had my wish and I was able to stream the music from an app or whatever. But I was able to just go into Smash Bros., go into the sort of like soundboard there, pick the music playlist, and just have it shuffle everything. And like, you got to keep the controller nearby because every now and then it's going to play something that you do not want to listen to. But like, for the most part, great background music.
That's awesome.
And like hundreds of hours of it.
Yeah, we used the Super Smash Brothers like soundboard feature for last week's episode, and you and I were talking about just speculating, how do they decide when they are creating like new characters for Smash Brothers?
How many voice clips do they need? How many sound clips does each character have? Because it's not just... Because you can get like every single sound that all of the fighters make, but also the assist trophies. Every single sound.
Yeah, and they're like, each character has a lot of different sounds.
Yes.
That game is just insane. It truly is
there's
insane.
There's just so much in there.
Yeah. I played... I've been dabbling. Mm. I finished Pentiment, and I finished my time with, I mean, I guess I did beat the game. I don't have to, with Princess Peach Showtime.
Right. You're looking for a new home.
Yeah, so, you know, like, I played a little bit of Sonic 2. I started Apollo Justice, but, because I bought that collection when it came out, but I haven't.
Are there just two games in the Apollo Justice collection?
I think there's three.
Okay.
And so, you know, I started that. Just
it's not,
a
you're
bit.
Not bad if there are only two.
But I think there are three.
I think there's three.
I think it's a trilogy.
Yeah. Okay.
But last week's episode, I had forgotten about the Tetris 99 Maximus Cup.
I remember.
Showtime.
Yes. I remember so much that when I got home, I texted you to say, Mark, don't, or I guess you were at my house. No?
No.
I was here.
Yeah.
I texted you to say, hey, don't forget. Play Tetris 99.
And I had, from the time we recorded it, forgotten.
Right.
So I went in and got it. So just closing the loop on that, mm-hmm. I did get the theme for Tetris 99. But yeah, so outside of dabbling, there were two things that I watched this week that I wanted to talk about. So one, Nintendo had two presentations at the Game Developers Conference last month that was held in San Francisco. One was about the making of like Super Mario Brothers Wonder. And the other one was called Tunes of the Kingdom, Evolving Physics and Sounds for Tears of the Kingdom. And thanks to AV in our Discord for posting the links to these video presentations. It was like an hour long, and basically it's broken up into a couple of parts. They talk about like the physics, like how they got the physics working in Tears of the Kingdom. And then they talk about the sound and how the teams all work together to make Tears of the Kingdom work. And Tears of the Kingdom is bananas. The behind-the-scenes stuff on Tears of the Kingdom is truly crazy. One of the things that they talk about in the like physics part of it is when they were, because so much of that game is being able to like meld things together, and what they found is that if you had some things that were based on real world or like the game's physics, and then you had things that normally in like Breath of the Wild were just animated and they didn't have any physical like any physics tied to them. So they use a gear as an example, or like a fence post, or like a fence, like swinging.
Yeah, sure.
You know, like all that stuff. Previously, it was animated, but there were no like. It wasn't based on the game's physics engine.
Right. It was doing it because it was scripted to do it and not because, like, that's the way the physics worked.
Exactly.
Yes.
But what they found is that once they introduced, like, the Ultra Hand mechanic, that having the mix of those two completely made the world go crazy, like, act in unexpected ways.
Yeah, sure.
So what they did is everything in Tears of the Kingdom has physics,
right, and behaves the way it does because of the physics. Well, that's I saw part of this where they're talking about the physics of the sound, and that it was because like sound comes from different places and from different things as they actually like quote unquote happen in the game, that it creates soundscapes that sound designers were not cognizantly making.
Yes, because like an example that they talk about is like the wagons.
Yes,
there is no wagon sound in Tears of the Kingdom. It's the sound of those specific wheels, chains of, you know, like the different elements put together, and that becomes the sound of a wagon in that game. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Well, and it's remarkable that it works because it's so many different things working in tandem together. And you know, it's just amazing to like compare that to a previous Zelda game where like just the philosophically going from like scripted to unscripted just means that like so much happens at the player's agency instead of at the developer's agency.
It also makes you appreciate, oh yeah, why like you know, we learned that back in 2022 the game was finished and they spent a year essentially polishing it.
Right, right.
You're like, oh yeah, that all makes sense. That makes complete sense to me that they would need that amount of time.
Right, because they introduced this huge world full of variables that were constantly bouncing off of each other. Yeah, of course you need to test it for a year.
So that was very cool. The other thing that I watched is it's 4 hours long, and so I've watched maybe the first 45 minutes of it. It is.
And then the second 45 minutes, and then the last 2.5 hours.
I've only made it 45 minutes in.
Uh-huh.
It's by a YouTuber named Penicoke 2012, and the name of it is Super Mario 64's Invisible Walls Explained.
Okay.
And so in Super Mario 64, there are times, like if you're watching like streams of it from speedrunners or just like in casual playthroughs, you might experience this where it seems like you should be able to jump between elements, or you jump up and there doesn't seem like there should be, but you run into what seems like an invisible wall.
Yeah, okay.
And you like bonk off of it and like fall back and you're like, huh, doesn't look like there's a wall there, doesn't look like there should be a wall there.
Are we talking mostly around like the boundaries of like stages, or like
sometimes within stages as well? But yeah, and so what this person did is basically an exhaustive breakdown of the different types of geometry in the game. Like, he talks specifically about walls, ceilings, and then out of bounds.
Yeah.
And the different properties of each, and the different, like, scenarios in which those elements, like, mess up, basically.
Yeah,
and create
sure.
these strange behaviors that you wouldn't expect. The first, like, 45 minutes is him breaking down the different type of geometry in the game and their properties and, like, how they work, and that part was super interesting. Then it gets a little more like in depth in a way that like I am just not equipped to handle, but the first like 45 minutes of it I thought were amazing. And so yeah, that's not really what I've been playing, but more what I've been watching.
Do you feel like you're waiting for something to like a game to come out to latch onto? Or are you just sort of like, because like looking ahead at the release calendar, it's kind of like.
Yeah, you got Endless Ocean at the beginning of next month. Yeah, I don't really know what I'm going to do. I was looking through the eShop. I was like, should I own Pikmin 4.
Mm.
You know, like, should I play Pikmin 4?
The answer is yes.
But I, even though, you know, like Princess Peach Showtime and Pentiment weren't on the same level of as like when I beat Dragon Quest XI S Echoes of Elusive Age Definitive Edition for the Nintendo Switch, my heart skipped a beat.
As did mine, because I can't save you on that. I don't know if people realize, but like part of the pact is you have to do it yourself.
Hope I got that right.
Yeah.
It's been a while. Whew, it's been a while. But it's like riding a bike, I think. When I finished that game, it was like, oh, okay, like I'm not ready to jump into anything else right now. But I feel like I'm like speed dating games
sure,
a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm just dabbling to see what it is that hooks me. But yeah, I don't really know what I'm gonna play.
Obviously I'm in a place right now where I am not where I am like restricting myself from playing games. But I have these, you know, elaborate fantasies once I'm past my deadlines of like all kinds of games that I need to like get back to, up to and including like the Star Wars game that came out last year, and obviously Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And I haven't been this busy in like in my life in like years, right? I'm just really, really looking forward to a period, which I think is going to come in just like a week or two, where my harder responsibilities evaporate and I've just got regular old like work and podcasts to worry about, where I can like play games again, like frivolously play games again. And I wonder if I'm going to be able to like focus on them. Like these are the like totally inane fears that run through my head. Like, are you even going to, or are you just going to play like Shovel Knight Dig some more, right? Get a new Picross or whatever. But yeah, it's weird to go through these like phases with gaming. And you know, you and I were talking before we started rolling about how the weirdness of this year, like kind of also just puts you in the weirdness of the year in terms of like video game releases, but specifically in terms of Nintendo releases, like puts us in sort of like a weird place hype wise, where I'm just like not excited for stuff coming out of Nintendo or like out of elsewhere.
Yeah, it does just feel like a weird, I mean, you know, look, I'm looking forward to Thousand Year Door.
Sure.
But I played that game a couple of times. You know, it's it does make me realize how spoiled we've been earlier in the Switch's life.
Yes.
Where every couple of months there's just like a banger.
Right. Yes. And like something exciting to talk about. Even if you weren't going to play it, like you wanted to talk about Fire Emblem Three Houses or, you know, whatever. There was just always something like big and impactful coming out. And it's just like not where we are right now. And we don't have any indication that it's going to change anytime soon. I know it's not Nintendo's way to be like, by the way, we're working on another, but they haven't even, for all the rumors, for as long as rumors about Switch 2 or next generation Nintendo hardware have been around, they've never said anything about it.
Yeah. I feel like the closest we've gotten is that, I mean, it's probably been a few years that they had that investors presentation.
Yeah.
That they said, like, next Nintendo hardware 20XX, like that's the closest we've ever gotten to them acknowledging
right,
that something
right,
existed,
right, which is just like that's a year a Mega Man game takes place, you know. It's not it's hard to put 20XX on your calendar as a thing to look forward to. All right, well, Mark, that's what we've been playing or not playing this week. Let's get into the new releases and what we might be playing next week.
Well, today, April 16th, another entry in Microsoft's grand experiment of putting Xbox Studios games on Nintendo and PlayStation hardware is happening, because Grounded is released on the Nintendo Switch digitally.
Mark, you played and enjoyed Pentiment, the last Xbox Game Studios game to appear on Switch. Are you interested in Grounded?
Man, I Grounded on Switch has a couple of strikes against it for me. One, I will be interested. I don't think reviews have come out for it yet. I didn't see anything today. I am curious how it runs, because what we've seen of it didn't look great. But really, in a game like this, probably the most important thing is prioritizing performance over graphics. And so if that's the trade-off they made, that makes total sense. Also, I am just not really in a place where I'm playing a lot of online games, and because the time that I have to game is so specific. that it's hard to like round up a group of friends to, you know, like get into Grounded. And
I also feel like you need to engage a different gear in your mind when you're playing games online, right? Like, if you're playing a game by yourself and you want to, like, stop, have a snack, text with your friends for a while, like, you can do that. But if you're playing a game online, you're like, that's what you're doing. So it feels, they feel like wholly different activities that you need to, like, mentally prepare for differently.
But I have always thought this game looked cool and would be really fun to play. I just don't think I'd do it on Switch if I was going to.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But
what would you play it on? You don't have a PlayStation or Xbox?
I know, but I think, you know, I still have this dream of getting like an Xbox Series S.
Right.
Just for the...
Just for Game Pass.
Game Pass catalog for like times like now where there's not really any big Nintendo games.
You could play Starfield.
I could play Starfield. I could play Fallout 3. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
Sea of Thieves.
Yeah. So, the answer is no. I'm not going to get this on Switch. I think it looks like a really cool game. I wish that I had, like, I could play it because I do think it would be a ton of fun.
Did you grow up watching Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
I remember.
Is that a game or a movie for you?
I remember seeing it at some point, but it was never anything that was meaningful to me.
Okay. Did you experience the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, like, area of
Disney MGM Studios?
Yeah.
Yes, I do remember doing
okay,
that.
Okay, yeah. I remember, and didn't they have, like, a 3D movie or, like, a 4D
they
movie
did.
Experience?
Yeah. Yeah, Honey, I shrunk
the
audience.
Yeah.
Where a dog sneezes on you, and they, like... There's like a belt or something that is at your feet that kind of like wiggles around to make it
like
rats
bugs
or yeah, like rats are going around. Yeah.
But they, I mean, rats would be little, and but if they shrink you, the rats should be huge.
Well, in the beginning, we're going to get into it. In the beginning of Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, the kid that gets blown up in Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
Yeah.
He has a pet rat. And then at the inventor place that they're at, there's this duplication machine, and the rat gets in the duplication machine.
Got it.
And I think that happens before you get shrunk
down. So wait a minute. There's a shrink ray and a duplicator?
I mean, it is the Inventor of the Year awards.
Sure. So it's not even... I didn't realize that. So it's not even Rick Moranis' character inventing this? Is some other...
No. So Rick Moranis...
Okay.
Rick Moranis' character... is accepting the Inventor of the Year award for his like shrinking machine.
Right.
But also
he has. Okay.
I don't know if maybe he came up with a duplicator. I don't remember that part.
Why didn't they have like a Honey, I Duplicated the Kids? Like, that's great. Or the kid that there was one kid and suddenly there are like 60 of them. That's a movie I want to see.
Yeah. I mean, hey, Hollywood loves reboots. There's one for you to pitch them.
Honey, I Duplicated the Kids. Pretty good. Mark, the only other game on the new release list this week that I wanted to shout out is a game coming out on Thursday, April 18th, called Which Country is Larger?
Yes. And I looked it up.
Yes. Tell me about it.
It
does it show you two countries and you have to guess which one is larger?
It shows you two countries' names and like flags.
Okay, great.
And then it asks you to choose which one is larger.
Just in terms of like square miles or like population,
I think it's
GDP.
I think it's a kilometer squared.
Okay, all right. There was once in the early days after Sarah and I moved to LA like 13 years ago. We were in the Bourgeois Pig on Franklin Boulevard Avenue Franklin Avenue
Franklin Avenue.
Okay, here we go. And there was a woman at the bar playing a one of those games where it's just like an empty map of the United States, and she was like putting the names on the states. And we struck up a conversation with her, and she was like, "I'm bad at this. Can you help me?" And we're like, "Okay, sure." And all she had three states. Can you guess which three states she had?
California.
Uh-huh.
Florida.
No.
Texas?
Oregon and Washington. She just had the West Coast.
Okay.
So I imagine that this Which Country is Larger game, very similar to that.
Philippines or Ukraine? Which country's larger?
Ukraine.
Yes. It's almost like double the size.
Yeah. Well, in terms of like landmass, but like the Philippines are more spread out because it's islands.
Could be true. United Kingdom versus Uruguay.
I'm going to say United Kingdom.
You're correct.
All right.
And we basically played which country is larger.
And we didn't have to pay, you know, $2.99 or however much.
$2.29.
That was pretty close. All right, Mark, those are the new releases. Let's close this segment out. Which brings us to a regular segment on our show. It is time for 433. In 1952, American composer John Cage wrote a piece called 433, wherein a performer or a group of performers didn't play their instruments for 4 minutes and 33 seconds. For the purposes of our this show, our instruments are talking about Nintendo. So, for the duration of one performance of 433, Mark and I will talk about something not at all Nintendo-related, the Huss fulfilling the contract of the piece. Mark? As I've been writing this weekend, I've had the Pixar movies on in the background as a pleasant noise and sound to occasionally distract me from my thoughts, except when my internet is down, and then I make it play Smash Brothers music for me, which means I've seen now Toy Story and Toy Story 2. I thought it'd be fun to rank the toys in Andy's room.
Perfect.
So let's maybe just start by generating a list of toys, and when we get to like 10 or 12 or something, we'll start ranking them.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So, I mean, obviously, yeah, you're already typing it before we say anything. Woody has got to go on the list, as does Buzz Lightyear.
Do you know that Woody has a last name?
No.
Yeah.
What is it?
Pride. Woody Pride.
I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't either. There's something about it that upsets me. So, Woody, Buzz Lightyear.
Right. Slinky.
Slinky Dog.
Slinky Dog.
Rex.
Rex and Mr. Potato Head.
Uh-huh.
I feel like those are the core five in the original, right?
I think so too. Mrs. Potato Head doesn't show up till the second one,
right? Well, because Molly gets Mrs. Potato Head at the end of the first movie.
Okay,
like it's part of the when they're listening for Christmas in the same way they did Andy's birthday at the beginning.
That's right.
of the movie. And Mrs. Potato Head, great, but Mr. Potato Head I think is more of a character. So anyone else from like that first movie, like RC, the car?
Oh, yeah.
Or Bo Peep?
Bo Peep.
Let's put Bo Peep on there.
RC, the car doesn't really have much of a personality.
No, he doesn't speak, but like his eyes do like dart around.
What about the Green Army Men?
Sure. Army Men. Yep. And I suppose on that same token, the claw machine aliens.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And then, okay, now I think we've really maxed out the first movie, which would bring us into the second movie, and I think the only new toys that make it into Andy's room from Toy Story 2 are Jesse and Bullseye, right?
Permanently, yeah.
Yeah, because the Prospector never makes it.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
He ends up with a little girl who's creative.
But we're not, okay, so.
And the second Buzz Lightyear doesn't make it back with them. The Zurg doesn't make it back with them.
So I'm going to cut out RC car, and then I think we have our 10.
Okay, so let's just review the 10. Woody, Buzz Lightyear, Slinky Dog, Rex, Mr. Potato Head, Bo Peep, Green Army Men, the Claw Machine Aliens, Jesse, and Bullseye.
Okay.
This is a good list. Who do you have a favorite of these toys?
I think it's probably between...
And I have to ask. As you are considering this, are you thinking about the characters of the toys, or are you thinking about them as toys that you would play with?
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. I was thinking of them as characters.
Okay.
But that does put an interesting wrinkle on it to think about them as toys themselves.
Let's think about them as toys themselves.
Okay. In that case, Bo Peep would be low.
Because she's a lamp, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say Bo Peep, if we're thinking about them as toys and not as characters, Bo Peep at the bottom, Slinky Dog at the bottom, Green Army Men at the bottom.
And Claw Machine Aliens at the bottom.
Claw Machine Aliens maybe actually at the very bottom.
Good dog toy, maybe?
Maybe. They don't even squeak, though.
Oh, yeah.
We did leave Wheezy off this list.
We did.
The penguin who lost his voice box.
But
I think that's okay.
I think he's from the third movie,
no,
right?
He's the second movie.
Oh, okay.
Because he's broken. Remember Woody gets his arm torn at the beginning of number two? and he gets put up on the shelf, and that's where he finds Wheezy, and he's like, I thought mom took you to get your Weezer fixed, or your voice box fixed, and he's like, no, she just left me up here.
You have seen it really recently.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. I have a hard time. I think I would put, I like Slinky Dog, I think, more than you do.
Okay. As a toy.
As a toy.
Okay. I think I would rather just have a Slinky. Because you can't make the Slinky Dog, like, go down the stairs.
Yeah.
You want a regular Slinky.
No, that's a good point. That's good. That is actually a really good point. Slinky Dog would not be that fun.
We're running out of time. We have 3 seconds left. Buzz Lightyear's the best toy.
Yeah, right? Buzz Lightyear's the best toy. Woody would be low on the list. As a character and as a toy.
Yeah, Woody's a tough hang, because, like... Okay, it stopped. Woody's a tough hang because he's like a self-sabotaging and not self-sabotaging. He's just sabotaging. He's a bad friend.
Yeah.
All right. We were accompanied today by a timer on my phone because I realized as we were approaching it, I didn't pull a clip of 4:33. Mark, let's get into the news.
Nintendo has confirmed that they won't be attending Gamescom 2024, the large gaming convention that's held every year in Germany in August.
The largest gaming convention. It is the biggest of these. Happens every year in Cologne, Germany.
Nintendo of Europe provided a statement when asked, quote, Gamescom is a central event in Nintendo's event calendar. This year, however, after careful consideration, we decided against taking part in Cologne. Instead, players can try out the games for Nintendo Switch as part of other Germany-wide events.
Okay, so Nintendo was there last year, yes?
Yes, after a... So they were regular attendees, and then we looked this up earlier. The event started in 2009, so Nintendo were regular attendees until the pandemic hit. And then last year was the first time they had been back since COVID. And then, so for 1 year, and then this year they're not attending. The other thing to note about last year,
yes,
is that there were reports coming out of Gamescom that at that event, Nintendo was showing some sort of new hardware to partners.
Right. And of course, because they were showing it off to partners, some like games press got like wind of it and all started leaking that was happening.
Right.
But I mean, crazy to think that here we are. I mean, we're not to August yet. So we are not truly a year later. But here we are 6 months later. No, even more than that, 10 months later. Crazy. No, 8 months later. Hold on. August, 4 months. We're 4 months into this year. Great. We're 8 months later. And we still don't know. Like, we have no. I know I'm just hammering the same point home, but like, for as much as it has been in the air, new Switch hardware, we don't have any of that information.
Yeah, it just seems to give credence to everything that we understand to be true so far, which is that Nintendo is going to have a light year this year. And that,
and not a Buzz Lightyear.
And not a Buzz Lightyear year this
which we
year.
Would like.
Yeah, more of a Woody year.
Mm-hmm.
And
more of a Slinky Dog year.
A Woody Pride? That was his last name, right?
That's what you said, yeah.
Disappointing.
I don't like it.
There's a reason they don't use that.
Yeah, I agree. It's not Woody Pride's Roundup. It's just Woody's Roundup.
I think it just reaffirms what we already know, that it's new hardware, probably not this year, and going to be a slow year for Nintendo first-party releases.
Yeah, really staking out the we're not going to Gamescom this year. That's now an event as late as August. And some of that, I guess, could be that, like, no, we're doing our own, like, blowing out the hardware and, like, revealing it in a spectacular way that is event wholly owned by Nintendo, and like they can, you know, sort of demand all the attention at that point instead of splitting it with the rest of the industry. But it's also like when they've done big announcements before Gamescom, they then still go to Gamescom and like have the thing that they announced there. So like, do we hear about, Mark, let's lay down some bets here. Do we hear about the successor to the Switch before Gamescom?
I'm leaning towards no.
This is crazy. I am also leaning towards no. But yeah, I mean, that's how this feels right now.
I know that there were rumors that we would,
yeah,
they
sometime
would announce
in June,
right? But I have a really hard time believing that that is true. And because it just seems so far to go from June to March of next year.
Right.
You know, like, that is a long time with, I don't really think you gain much by showing it that early.
Right.
And then second, like, I guess maybe they could put out a press release, like a heads up, like they did for the 3DS, being like, this is coming and we'll talk about it more later. But that also, like, the last time they did that was 10 years ago. So
right,
what more,
right,
you know, like, when they started acknowledging the NX, and that was both times, it felt like their hands were forced by business, like, decisions out of their control.
Yes.
Like, the Wii U not doing very well with the 3DS, it had basically leaked entirely. Like, I just don't, Nintendo just feels in a different position. It doesn't feel like the same world as it was when that stuff was happening.
It doesn't seem like the same world, but it also doesn't feel like the same Nintendo, right? And the product that they're releasing will not have the same sort of responsibility that the original Switch had. But that I mean, that also, I don't know. The whole thing feels uncharted, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, can they even, what does this system need to be to, like, drum up the excitement of, like, you know, we're having Koizuma lounging on a couch and showing off the Joy-Cons. Are we there? Like, what does this thing have to be, I guess, is what I'm saying. Can they release something exciting enough to garner that sort of, like, event? And do they need to?
Yeah. And right, because it's like, do you need the enthusiast press to love what you are doing in order to be successful?
Right.
You know, like, do you need the hype of the enthusiast press? And clearly, with the amount of Switches that they sold, that is more than just enthusiasts. But you can't argue that early adopter is being excited about a product. I don't know. I don't know that anybody has ever cracked the code.
Right,
but it does feel like,
right,
the longer they wait, the, at least as, like, enthusiasts, is the expectation just gets, like, higher and higher.
Right, right. And the success of the beginning of the Switch, the way it was revealed, and the market that it was introduced into is unreplicatable. We don't live in that world anymore. You know, now they don't have, like, a backup pillar unless we're just talking, like, movies and,
right,
theme parks and stuff, but there's no other, like, pillar to fall back on.
As far as, like,
as far
hardware.
As we know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both as far as hardware and as far as we know, yes.
Do you think that, like, they went to Gamescom last year.
Mm-hmm.
Allegedly, they showed off hardware there. Do you think not going back this year is because they don't want more leaks? They got what they wanted out of it last year.
Mm.
They didn't get what they wanted out of it, so it's not worth going again. Like, it feels like specifically them not going to Gamescom could be for a myriad of reasons.
Yeah, totally. But it, I mean, like the quote from Nintendo Europe said that Gamescom is a central event in Nintendo's event calendar. Like, that is true. They prioritize going. I honestly, I don't know. The whole world feels different right now. I genuinely have no idea. Do you have, like, a prevailing theory about why you think they're not going?
I think it's probably a confluence of events. Like,
yeah,
it's probably they don't have much show.
Right.
You know, to put on the show floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's not new hardware. Maybe they made the connections they needed to make last year with the developers they wanted to connect with.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
We've been sort of dancing around something for a while. And obviously, Switches are still selling. Those sales are going down. But they are still selling. When do we start talking about Nintendo being in trouble? Do we ever talk about that? Is their war chest so deep at this point that, like, it doesn't matter?
Well, this is where it's really hard for me. When we were talking about Grounded.
Yes.
Right? To me, that seems like oh, that's so late for this to be coming
right
to the Switch. But you also have a install base of over 100 million Switches
sure.
that are out there. And I have no idea how much people are playing their Switch.
Right.
You know, so is there an audience that, because at the end of the Wii's life, the Wii was not selling that well. There weren't games for it. Like, people were putting away their Wiis. I don't have any sense if that's true, generally speaking, for the Nintendo Switch.
Right. Or that it would be true, especially for, like, kids, right? Like, I think there's a much... There aren't very many places in the realm of consoles where they are making kids' games and marketing games towards kids. Like, it is a place where both PlayStation and Xbox have, like, maybe legitimately failed is at like catering to a kid audience or a family audience.
Because when your console is like $600,
well, yeah, great point.
You know, it's much harder to give it to a kid for Christmas. You know what I mean?
That's absolutely true. And just, but like, you know, when I think about, I turn on the Switch and like, I am greeted by a bunch of like colorful icons for, you know, obviously games that I bought. So like, you know, whatever, but like the news channel there is showing me like, hey, this is here are some facts about Waluigi, or have you played Princess Peach? Like, it is showing me bright, colorful, fun, family friendly characters. I turn on my PlayStation and it's like Helldivers and, you know, Final Fantasy VII, like dudes with swords and guns. And like, it's not a kid friendly environment. So, I guess all of which is just to say, like, is there a flourishing kid market that is, you know, continuing to cruise along as though, like, you know, none of the current Nintendo problems matter?
Right. Right. And if you're getting a Switch today, you have 8 years of video games,
right,
of amazing Nintendo first-party releases to catch up on that you will pay $60 for because they haven't dropped price on any of them.
One of Sarah's nieces started playing Animal Crossing in the last like couple months or last couple weeks, and it's just like, oh yeah, that's what a it was, not a flash in the pan, but like it was a moment in time for most of us that got there right away. But like, there's nothing wrong with playing it right now. So.
Right. Last week, Nintendo had an update for the Super Nintendo on Nintendo Switch Online, with three new games, Wrecking Crew 98, and Amazing Hebariki, which neither of these have ever been released in outside of Japan, right?
That's right.
So Wrecking Crew 98, a Super Nintendo take on Wrecking Crew?
Kind of. It's like a combination of that and like Match 3 puzzle at the same time. It's a competitive game. I'm very interested to check this game out. I have not turned it on yet, but yeah, and it's also just like cool to see Wrecking Crew with 16-bit graphics, so you can actually see that the characters are meant to be Mario and Luigi and Spike, Foreman Spike, and like a bunch of other playable characters that are like from the extended Mario universe. Very weird game, very cool that it's part of what they're bringing over to NSO.
And then this Amazing Hibariki game looks like, to me, it looks like isometric 16-bit Smash Brothers. It's four players on a plane that are like a surface, not an
right.
airplane.
Not like the snakes on a plane.
Right. That are like fighting each other, and it seems like there's some bizarro things that pop into the screen and add an element of randomness to the whole thing. I don't know if this is a mascot character that people are familiar with in Japan, you know, like if it's like part of a franchise or some like licensed game. I'm not sure. Or if
yeah,
it's just an original property.
It's a spinoff of the Hebariki series, which is a video game. It's, you know, more from Sunsoft. So yeah, what are you, Hebariki? Yeah, they're just like cute little animals, very like Hello Kitty-esque, very Sanrio-esque. But yeah, from Sunsoft. And look, there are a bunch of Sunsoft games on the Nintendo Switch Online. And then did you mention the last game already?
No, okay. Super R-Type.
Super R-Type, which is an R-Type game. That one seems a little bit like a, like, they let us use this, so we put it in here. Weird set of updates. I also can't remember the last time they put out an update to NSO that was just Super NES games. In the last like year or so since the Game Boy was added to the lineup, they've done like two Game Boy games, one NES, one Super NES. And for whatever reason, April 12th, they were like, we're celebrating the Super NES.
Yeah, still a mystery. Still would just love to know how these updates come about. I'm not judging. No. I just want to know. I just want to understand.
We just want to know. Also, did you see that so the last time we got a big update was when all the Rare games came over. Among them was the Super NES game Battletoads and Battle Maniacs. But the Japanese NSO didn't get any of these games. They got like a handful of others. Battletoads and Battle Maniacs on the Super Famicom finally made it over as part of this update.
Oh, funny.
I think maybe instead of Super R-Type, I'm not sure.
Seems like Nintendo is not finished going after emulators after they successfully had the Uzu Switch emulator taken offline.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, The Verge reported that Discord shut down the servers for the Switch emulators Suyu and Sudachi and completely disabled the lead developers' accounts. Also, according to The Verge, it's not just emulators themselves that Nintendo is going after. Nintendo reportedly sent takedown requests to GitHub to remove 27 forks of something called the Sick Patch Updater, as well as things called Lockpick, RCM, Kesplez NX, and Incognito RCM, which helps Switch owners and developers obtain encryption keys.
So, okay, and that's all like them going after pretty aggressively the tools that are used to emulate Switch games, right? Like, it feels like Nintendo, for as much as they're putting gas on going after people emulating current games, is sort of ignoring the like robust retro emulation scene at the moment.
Right. And I feel like they don't historically have like a history of going after retro game emulation.
Right. Well, and like going after retro game emulation is also one of those things that like they don't really want to test that much, like to actually bring any of those like into a courtroom and try to actually like set some precedent on it is like dangerous territory, because like genuinely no one knows which way it'll go at this point. Either being like, no, these things are in the, you know, public domain or have been around long enough and, you know, whatever. So either that or, all emulation ends. Like, it's kind of neither side wants to like push it. But if it is a product that Nintendo is actively selling right now, and are like defending their current copyrights for games, that are existing at present, that's a more like cut and dried thing that I think they just feel more justified in going after.
You know, very recently, Apple has started allowing game emulators onto the App Store. Their hand was kind of forced into it by the Europe regulators. And emulators have been available on the Google Play Store for a very long time.
Right.
But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if any of the game developers, or I guess like really of the modern game hardware owners, Nintendo is the only company that has a real like robust retro,
right?
You know, going
yeah.
back so many years. Obviously PlayStation, at this point, I guess,
yeah, at this point it's 30 years for yeah. them too. Yeah.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I don't know if having those on the Apple App Store make any of the big three sit up and take notice, but
yeah,
I don't know.
You know, it's You and I don't do a lot of like emulation or like downloading of ROMs or anything like that. But one of the things that is like part of my post Turtles Deadline fantasy is loading up my Analog Pocket with all of the ROMs for the Game & Watch games and just like indulging in that. That's been a persistent fantasy of mine for a while. I think I'm actually going to do it. But now I'm like, oh, do I need to download that stuff sooner rather than later? But also, like, was Nintendo going to go after their Game & Watch ROMs? Like, come on.
Yeah, I don't think so. It seems like they use the, what is it, like, Digital Millennium Copyright Act. You know, you will hear people talk about the DMCA all the time. And I don't know that applies to you know, that's like the legal mechanism by which they are,
right.
You know, like they have these DMCA takedown requests that they send to like GitHub or whoever. And then GitHub at that point, like, receives those. And GitHub's not under any obligation to host anything they don't want to.
Right.
So, you know, they're like, you know what? We don't have to deal with this legal headache. We're just going to remove these tools,
right,
you know, and that'll just be the end of it. Like, we don't, there's no, nothing forcing them from hosting it. But I don't know if the Digital Millennium Copyright Act applies to, like, the Nintendo Entertainment System hardware.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's not digital. It's not, you know, like, it's not in the same way. So I don't know that they have the same legal tools that they use nowadays.
That is very interesting.
On older hardware.
Right. Especially like, this oldest of hardware. I mean, you know, Ball is from 1980.
Well, and, you know, there are, you can walk into a CVS and buy a retro console.
Great point. Yeah.
You know, that has a lot of, not Nintendo first party, but a lot of 8-bit games on it.
Right.
And so I think a lot of that stuff is just dust in the wind at this point.
Yeah. Good point. Good point.
Finally, Pokemon Go is
kicking
off a new campaign called Rediscover Pokemon Go 2024, which promises enhancements to the major functions of the app. I watched the trailer for this, and it really seems like it's like a refresh over the next 3 weeks. Starting tomorrow is the first round, where they're introducing a new look, new features to the entire thing.
Hmm.
Just trying to, I think, you know, re-engage people who have maybe dropped off, like, and then also making improvements to the app. So this is what it says. Experience the thrill of Pokemon Go like never before with our latest updates. Discover a fresh new look with updates to the in-game map, encounter screens, battle screens, and more, all tailored to your location. From lush forests to bustling cities, tropical beaches to rugged mountains, you can immerse yourself in the diverse landscapes within Pokemon Go. Who knows what Pokemon awaits you on your journey?
Who knows?
Both your avatar options and the style shop have also received updates, allowing you to express yourself with more customization options than ever before. Plus, take your Pokemon photography to new heights with our updated Go snapshot experience, which now allows you to include up to 3 Pokemon in a single photo. Don't miss out on these exciting updates. Dive into the adventure today.
Important to remember, Pokemon Go has been around for 8 years.
Yeah,
it's been around so long. It predates the Switch. Another thing that we are claiming is an absolute dinosaur. I was just thinking about how you know, Hillary Clinton told people to Pokemon go to the polls, and we find ourselves in like another election year against Donald Trump, and it may be rediscover Pokemon go to the polls here in 2024.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, just worth reflecting on the fact that this game has been around and has been supported for almost a decade at this point. So, yeah, we haven't touched Pokemon Go for a long time, right?
Yeah, and there's probably a lot of people, like, lapsed gamers that the people who are playing are going to get their hooks in deeper, and then people who have stopped playing for whatever reason, this is an opportunity for them to maybe come back.
Now, you and I have our Nintendo-themed walking based phone game of choice,
Pikmin Bloom,
which we love and play every day. do you think it is possible that, like, now that we have been acclimated to using that on walks and, like, going on walks because of Pikmin Bloom, that we can transfer any of that enthusiasm over to Pokemon?
I think it's possible. I don't know if you played Pokemon Go at all, like, when it was first coming out.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was playing it for a few months and had a really good time. So, I mean, it can be very fun. And that was, you know, 8 years ago. They've added so much.
Right.
Made so many improvements to it. But I think when it comes down to it, I only have room in my heart for one walking-themed Nintendo game.
Also, let me ask you this. Is Pokemon Go, I mean, obviously it was a sensation when it launched, right? Which is part of its longevity, and part of its success as it's been ongoing for so long, is that they keep adding to it. But does that sort of suggest that, like, what Pokemon should be is a platform that just gets added to and supported, like, forever in, like, you know, like, putting out a new generation, a new game, like, and, you know, kind of resetting everything down to zero? Does that make sense, or should it be something that's just, like, supported forever? You're giving me a smile right now.
I'm giving you a smile because I feel like I've, like, warped back to the IGN message boards in 2005.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, here's a successful example.
I'm not saying you're wrong.
Right.
I'm just saying that this is the debate that people have been having since World of Warcraft first arrived on the scene, and people were like, oh, Pokemon should just be an MMO that exists forever.
Right. But, I mean, is that not what Pokemon Go is? Sort of? Some extent?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, these hypothetical questions that we were asking 20 years ago are now relevant again. Sort of. So I guess everything repeats and stays the same, and when we got a Pokemon Go to the polls in November. All right, Mark, let's get out of the news. That is going to do it for this episode of Nintendo Cartridge Society. Thank you so much for listening. You can join our Discord. You should email us for an invitation if you're not already in there. Anthony DeLuca made our logo. Our theme music is provided by 8BitBetty. You can get more of his music by going to 8BitBetty.com or by listening right now. For my co-host, Mark Mitchell, this is Patrick Ehlers saying thank you for listening.